CliffCentral.com.
Yebo, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning, a pretty chilly Monday morning, but I think we may just be through the worst of it. There was lots of snow in KZN on the mountains over the weekend. I know I have two friends who were posting stuff on Instagram where they were stuck in the snow. How cool is that? In South Africa, huh? And this is in August.
I felt sick to the pit of my stomach.
Why?
Friends went up to Afriski in they sent me photos and videos yesterday. Also stuck up there, they had to tow them out. But I felt sick that I couldn't be there. You know, if you are in that whole world, there is nothing better than snowboarding on fresh powder. And I felt sick. I felt absolutely. He kept sending me videos. I felt sick, absolutely ill that I didn't go. I could have gone Friday. It was an option.
Jealous down.
Unbelievable.
Jealous down. We were just talking about jealousy. Man. Yeah. We were just talking with Dr. Hanan about jealousy and his Bulelo who had the jealousy eat him up this weekend. Anyway, I'm over the cold. I'm over winter. I'm sick of it now. I don't want to see any more brown or yellow or gray. I want the world to be green again, and I can't wait for spring. I'm so goddamned excited about spring. And you know, my whole personality improves. I'm sure yours does too. I'm not the only one. But I just love it. The birds are chirping. The sun comes up nice and early. Things are bursting into bloom. Flowers are everywhere. The trees are bright green. It's just my favorite thing. I love spring so goddamn much. Love it. All right. So there is some stuff to get into this morning. I received this incredible... Like a blog, I suppose you could call it, but it's really about an experiment that was conducted. And I know you'll love this, Mbulelo, because it's like a social experiment. So they did something called the Universe 25 experiment with mice a long time ago. It's one of the most interesting and terrifying experiments in the history of science. I thought I'd just share it with you this morning. They watched the behavior of a colony of mice. And it's an attempt by scientists to explain human society, which you always have to reduce to a certain number. I mentioned also that there was this interesting condensation of the whole of humanity into 100 people. What would those people look like? Where would they be from? What would their condition be? You know, those kinds of things interest me as much, I'm sure, as they do you. So the idea of Universe 25 came from the American scientist John Calhoun, who created an ideal world in which hundreds of mice would live and reproduce. And he built the so-called paradise of mice, which was specifically designed for rodents. They had an abundance of food and water, as well as
paramice.
Paramice, exactly. Abundance of food and water, large living space. In the beginning, he placed four pairs of mice that in a short time began to reproduce, resulting in their population growing rapidly. However, after 315 days, their reproduction started to decrease significantly. Obviously, you know, with the resources and the space, naturally, mammals or any other living creatures, even bacteria in a petri dish, you start to feel the pressure of the population and the lack of resources that can sustain that population, and it starts to have an effect on that population. So, after 315 days, population decreases in terms of the population rates, right? So, what happens then? The number of rodents reaches 600. And then a hierarchy starts being formed. And it's interesting, these wretches appear. Now, this is what he called them, Calhoun. The larger rodents began to attack the group, with the result that many males begin to collapse psychologically. This is very interesting. As a result, the females did not protect themselves, in turn became aggressive towards their young. As time went on, the females showed more and more aggressive behavior, isolated themselves, and there was a lack of reproduction in the colony. There was a low birth rate and at the same time an increase in mortality in younger rodents because they weren't being protected, obviously, by the males. Then a new class of male rodents appeared. Now, this is, again, I just think fascinating because it's got to do with the decline of Rome. It's got to do with all of these societies in history that have collapsed. And they talk about these males who had no interest in the females, and they isolated the females even more, and they made up the majority of the population. As time went on, juvenile mortality reached 100%, reproduction reached zero. Among the endangered mice, there was all kinds of strange behavior, cannibalism. They noticed that there was just pure sexual pleasure, and that involved homosexual mice, And that at this time, there was also lots and lots of food because now the population's decreasing. So even though the living conditions are not necessarily worse for these mice anymore after the infant mortality has gone to 100%, there's plenty of food, but they're very unhappy, these mice. And you'll see 2 years after they started the experiment, the last baby of the colony was born. By 1973, he had killed the last mouse in the universe. That was universe 25, rather. Calhoun repeated the same experiment 25 more times, and the result was exactly the same every single time. His research has been used as a model for interpreting social collapse, and his research serves as a focal point for the study of urban sociology. How do you like that? And what do you make of it?
So one of my heroes is Jane Goodall, and she used that exact, I mean, his name, by the way, when you get into the sciences is, it's quite divisive, but Jane Goodall did a very similar experiment to try and get us to a place to see chimpanzees. I don't know if you know this one. I don't want to bore you.
No, go ahead. People know this. Go ahead. Love to hear it. I'd never heard of this before.
There's another really interesting similar mouse study with drugs. But anyway, Jane Goodall tried to see what is the maximum size for great apes to live together before the sort of what we call the bellicose nature comes out. And she got to around 21, 22. And without being prompted, what would happen is alphas or certain alphas would leave at about 20, 21, 22. Mm-hmm. They would split off from the group. And this happened, and she did it over and over and over and over again. And it's very similar to this. And most of her results got to the same, is when they got comfortable in the food and the aggression with the females to their young. Is this is what happens when we get comfortable, right? As we turn to our absolute worst sides. It brings out...
Well, this was prompted. There's a story that happened last week in America where a mother, a woman in, I can't remember which city it is now, but this was all over the news last week. And it was a very disturbing story about this mother who... basically threw her child from a 3 or 4 story building because she didn't want to have the child anymore. The child had some kind of physical disability, and it was impeding on her enjoyment of her own life. And so she just decided to just throw the child from the top of a building. And she's obviously going to be held criminally responsible for this, but they're saying now, oh, well, she might have been insane and all of these things. This may not be insanity. I mean, this may just be the kind of thing that you're talking about here, where, you get these extraordinary behaviors by both the male and the female of the species, doing things that are just completely antithetical to their nature and to the way that they would behave in a healthy society. And I keep thinking, if this happened, maybe it did happen in other places, in other times. What would we think of it then? Because we'd be able to assess it more objectively. It's much easier to look back into the past and go, well, they didn't really have antibacterial treatments. They didn't really know what disease was. So we can forgive them this, or we can maybe understand why they made stupid decisions there. But I wonder what someone would say looking at our civilization, the way the world is made up now. If they were, 100 years into the future, what are they going to say about us?
One of the things that I've always stood by is that, often drug use is associated with people who are in poverty and have really horrible lives. But by the same token, drug use is popular by people who live comfortably.
Absolutely.
And it's because you remove the distractions of life, having to work hard to get money, spending 8 or more hours a day of your life working and not just sitting around. Having to, even though we do grocery shopping, we're not actually hunting for animals. It is a fight for food. We have to get into our cars, and we have to find parking and pay that money out of our wallets. And,
but it's like,
as soon as you remove all of these distractions.
It's like Mbulela was saying when he sat down with his your nephew. You said, and this is all linked, funnily enough. I mean, that wasn't the plan when we started the show this morning, but everything from Bulelo's story about how he had to give his nephew a lecture about how lucky he was, and Leanne saying,
and he had a little breakdown, by the way. I was shocked at that. Yeah, like a guy had a full on breakdown about me being too hard on him.
Oh,
like,
really?
Oh my God. No, it's like full on breakdown about how he's under pressure.
You just said to him, things aren't so bad and don't feel sorry for yourself. And he took that as a tremendous affront.
Well, I should have maybe said it like that. I said, it's actually embarrassing that you are saying this. What are you talking about being under pressure, Chief? Like, where is your perspective? Because I'm kind of in my own family, I'm not going to tolerate it. However people raise their families, but I just know where my aunt's from. I know how my father grew up. Like, do you have no perspective, Chief? You went to freaking Hilton College.
That's the thing, not the problem, but that's the thing. It's when you're living so comfortably, you start focusing on, you start internalizing and overanalyzing and thinking that your world's really bad because you aren't being distracted by the normal things in life, like fighting to get food.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point, Leon. You know, a friend of mine is just finished her PhD in Finland. And one of the dark hidden secrets of Scandinavia is that their youth suicide rates are at a level they have never seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's to your point. And I proposed to her that, you know, when you have nothing else to do and you just look in and now it's really just about you, that's a tough place to be, to constantly have the time to, you know, we all think self-actualize is this great gift. But man, as human beings, we are these really fickle little things. And once you have to look inside, as Dr. Hanan said,
some people crumble.
It's not for everyone. And it's happening to the youth. I mean, in Scandinavia, imagine.
Isn't there a very fine line between being self-actualized, which is a goal most of us should have? I mean, it's the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Once you've satisfied those underlying needs, then you get to the top and you can hopefully be self-actualized. But if you don't have food and you don't have comfort and you don't have warmth and you don't have love and you don't have meaningful relationships, you can never get to the self-actualization point. But if we imagine that self-actualization is at the top, it has an ugly twin, which we don't talk about very often, which is self-absorption. And there are many people who, I suppose, haven't got enough to worry about on a daily basis. They think they do. They make it up in their heads. They imagine themselves to be victims, because that's very on vogue at the moment too. And therefore, they fill their time up with self-absorbed nonsense. You know, they need to go and commune with the gods. They need to go on a mushroom trip every other week because they feel that they haven't got enough purpose in their life. Or they need to read self-help books 24/7 because that's going to be the key to them unlocking and understanding of themselves, and then they'll finally be happy. What they're really doing is just living, and they imagine that to be some kind of suffering, which of course life is. But also they imagine themselves to be extremely important in the constitution of the world. They will come and go. And remember this, in 1,000 years, maybe even less than that for many of us, no one's even going to remember you were here. So stop taking yourself so seriously. Like, really.
But it's interesting how some of us tend to self-treat after we've self-diagnosed. And how we make ourselves go camping, where it is difficult to get food and where your whole day is based on what's for breakfast, what's for lunch, and what's for supper. Right. And do I have clean underwear? You know? But am I going to be warm enough tonight? Mm.
It's such a great point. Some lunatic called Friedrich Nietzsche spoke about this a long time ago, Leanne, to exactly what you're saying, right? And it came to his most famous saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But anyway, he said, let me translate it to modern day, essentially, a free lunch will always make you break inside eventually, is that the suffering, right, is actually important to the self-actualization at all times. You can't just be free lunch. This is why the yuppie kids, Gareth, that you're talking about need to go on ayahuasca trips just to become enlightened.
Yeah.
And
Because there isn't actually enough real stuff going on in their lives for them to have genuine concerns.
But the suffering is necessary to make you feel human. And most of us now living in the suburbs we have less and less and less of that. And all we have is the gluttony and conspicuous consumption. And eventually, you know, at some core level, that's not enough. It's not enough to be human.
And maybe that's also where we start creating monsters. Because in our heads, There isn't enough actual responsibility or terror. And trust me, terror can be an extremely motivating thing, right? I mean, if you've ever felt true terror, true fear, if you thought it was, if I don't pass my matric exams, if that's the level of your fear, and the rest of your life has been easy, then obviously, you know, any challenge that comes up at any point in your life is going to make you suicidal, because you'll be like, oh my God, this is worse than matric. And I thought matric was the worst thing ever. And then you're not going to be able to handle any pressure. Yeah. And I mean, parents are to blame for this too. I know we give parents a really hard time on the show, but the reality is, like, there are just a bunch of really, really weak people in the world, and they're not particularly useful to a mouse society or to a baboon society or a chimpanzee society or to a human one. And there are lots and lots of passengers on this bus. Someone's got to drive the bus, and they've got to be people who make sure that the road is clear ahead. They've got to be people who are maintaining the wheels, who are making sure that the windows aren't broken, who are making sure that the people on the bus don't have to worry about the other people on the bus trying to kill them while they sleep. You know, these are things that, as you mentioned with that book that you read about the decline of the United States and kind of where they're headed and China's new, very aggressive and rampant need to take control. All of this is happening around us, and I'm just interested in the long story here. Like, what are people going to say about right now when they read history books long after we're gone? They're going to say those people were complaining about the coronavirus, or those people were moaning about how, you know, they had to use reuse bags from the shopping center that they go to because they're not doing plastic bags anymore. What a bunch of losers. What a weak society they'd started to become. Or they're constantly doing selfies of themselves, or they're using filters to make themselves look prettier because that gives them some sense of meaning. I mean, that's going to be
worrying about their pronouns.
Yeah, that's going to be ridiculous, right? People are going to laugh at us when they do that in 1,000 years' time.
Yeah,
it's very true.
It's just to add to the point, there's a TV show called Below Deck, which is a yacht which goes out every season, and you know, follows the lives of the rich and famous who book these trips, which mm-hmm. are highly expensive. And you've got these families usually, or groups of bored friends who are so rich and so bored as it is. And you're now putting them on this yacht where they've got everything is provided for them. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to think about, hey guys, why don't we go fishing and get, you know, do a prawn braai, or, you know, let's do mussels. I know this really great place to buy, you know, fresh seafood. Everything's given to them. And so they start moaning and picking at things that really don't matter, like certain things on the menu. Yeah. And
the society starts to break down.
Their brains are craving some kind of challenge, but there's nothing. Yeah. They've just been given everything. It's the wrong place for them to be. They should be camping.
You've nailed it. And you know what it is? Like, an interesting thing for me is the erasure of anything that looks like alpha, both male and female, mm-hmm. from the public spaces. As soon as you look like you've got some sort of strength, and again, it's that fine line between, it's erasure. We want soft. We want, let's talk about it. As soon as there's somebody who wants to, man and woman, by the way, mm-hmm. now we are slowly erasing both. It does worry me. And we do find ourselves at this Thucydides trap, right? I quickly want to explain what that is. It's part of that book. Is that so? Thucydides said this as he saw, and they made 300 about this movie about this Thucydides trap. By the way, the Athenians against Leonidas, that Scottish guy. What's his name again?
No, Gerard Butler. It was the Spartans versus the Persians. But yeah,
But in Thucydides' trap, though, it's the Athenians against the Peloponnesian Wars. Okay. So in this, the incumbent Athenians, is that now the new guy, as he usurps, and now the theory is that China is usurping America. Mm-hmm. When the new kid on the block usurps the incumbent power, that point of friction as you go past, so as China is going past America, there's a point where there will be a war, and that's where we are, where the alpha and the simp now mm-hmm. is the simp is now kind of taking over the alpha. And we're at that friction point, and it may or may not be, a change in history, and who knows? Like, who knows where we're headed? But I'm scared of it, and I try and seek out a little bit of suffering. To Leanne's great point just now, is like, as much as I do the self-indulgent, like 100-miler stuff training, is there is a part of me that wants to kind of like, you know, shout out Jesus and his two-part book, but there is salvation in suffering.
I often feel like I'm really just too comfortable. And there's nothing wrong with being comfortable, and it's lovely to be in that space. But I often think, you know, if I just push myself a little bit further and made it a little bit harder for myself, that I would be so much better. And that's the truth. You only do get better by doing difficult things and by taking on responsibilities. You know, you don't get better by making the world around you extra soft and extra fluffy.
And you need to be, you know, why I love mountain running in particular. I mean, everybody can have their thing. What I love is it puts you really in perspective. When you're out there and it's -2 and you're alone, you're feeling, oh, shame. The mountain doesn't care. You there's a good chance you're going to fall off and die if you don't focus. But that's it's for me, it gives me a little bit of perspective to say, you actually don't matter. Look at the size of this thing you're on. That's, this is the real world.
That's not the first time you've mentioned that word perspective. And I think that's probably out of all the things we've discussed this morning, from, you know, your conversation with your nephew to Dr. Hanan to, you know, the discussion of jealousy and narcissism that we had with him to even this rat society that we were, mice society that we were talking about just now. It all comes down to perspective. And so often we're in our own heads and we just don't have perspective. And we forget that the way we see ourselves isn't the way that the rest of the world will see us.
And a lot of that,
yeah,
a lot of that doesn't have to be created by these eternal hardships. We don't have to punish ourselves now in order to get to that situation. It can be as easy as watching a history documentary, or you know, just being educated about what's come before us and how other people have suffered. Even a life documentary on other people's lives. And we spoke about Afghanistan, you know, learning about how those people live. And that can provide the hardship and the perspective.
But nothing wrong, as Mbulelo says, with taking on a little bit of hardship and taking on some responsibilities, because it does give you purpose and perspective. So, okay, let's leave it at that, because this is getting so it's getting psychological and it's getting esoteric and it's getting complicated. I think we got to move on to something a lot more fun. And this is something we do every Monday. We missed out on it last Monday because of the public holiday, Women's Day. But we're back in the saddle today. And this is Collectomania, which is our opportunity to catch up with people who have really interesting and exciting collections. It's brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And we're going to talk to Wesley Robinson. He sent us an email. He said, hey, I've got a collection. And you can do this too. You can send us your email, contact@cliffcentral.com. or Gareth@cliffcentral.com, whichever you prefer, and we will add you to our list of really interesting and really cool creators and collectors all over South Africa. Wesley said, he cut straight to the chase. He said, I'd like to show you my aquarium collection on Collectomania. I have 11 tanks ranging from 205 liters to 5 liters, and there's lots to talk to him about this morning. Yes. Hey, Wesley.
Morning, guys.
How are you doing, man?
How's it going? Good and you?
Yeah, good to see you.
How's it, Leanne?
Yeah, you talked to me.
How's it, Mpulelo Lo?
That's exactly right. You said it perfectly.
How you doing, Wesley?
So, Wesley, you've got how many tanks? 11.
Well, it's actually 12 now. I've got another one last week. So it's actually called multiple tank syndrome, MTS.
It's a serious problem.
The thing is that you don't start out, like, you start out with one, you think, oh, you're just going to have it in your house, it's going to look cool.
Uh-huh.
And then you realize that fish can't go with that fish is going to eat this fish.
Yeah.
So you just end up getting more and more and more and more tanks.
So, Wesley, I mean, this is almost what we were talking about just now, about societies and how it all works, right?
Yeah.
Some fish, you have to figure it out. Do you often figure it out just by seeing that they eat each other and you go, oh, shit, mustn't do that again?
No, the thing is, like, maybe in the beginning, but when you become a responsible fish keeper, you, like, research what the fish are and you make sure they're not going to eat each other.
So tell us about how this all started, because that's usually, for many people, the most interesting thing is like, how do you become a collector? And really collecting fish and these aquariums, it's a hell of a thing. It's very complicated and you have to know your stuff. You have to do your research. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you can just leave for a week. I can leave some of my collections for years and go back to them. But if you do, these creatures will die.
No, so I got a fish tank about 10 years ago, just mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And then it was only about 3 years ago that I got, say, two or three. And then when we moved into this house, I would say in the last year, probably since lockdown started, because obviously we need something to do at home, is when I really started getting into it. And what I'm into now is like a lot of like fish breeding. So instead of just having the fish, you want to breed the fish.
Okay, and who do you live do you live with? Because some of these guys, it's usually guys who collect these things. Let's be fair. There have been a lot of girls.
Lots of girls.
We've had lots of girls in Collectomania too. But it's usually like the weird sort of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle collection, the collection of whiskeys. I mean, these are very guy things. Yeah. We had Jasmine on, and we've had some others. Just last week, we had somebody who's collecting different things as well. But if you do, you have a wife? Is that who has to put up with this crazy collection of yours?
Well, it would be a husband.
Oh, okay.
All right. The only people that have to deal with my fish tanks are my dogs.
Only your dogs. Okay, so you've got the fish and the dogs. How many dogs are we talking about, by the way? I just want to make sure it's not a compulsive pet animal, animal collector of all kinds. Three, okay. So, all right, how many fish do you reckon altogether? Can you give us an exact number?
300.
Sure.
What?
And that's growing by the day, because I just...
Wow.
Collected eggs last week, so they should be hatching any day now. They're actually in that tank there.
Okay,
so if you can see, this is my office, so I have some tanks here and some there.
That's amazing. Let's just look at some. I've got some of the pictures here. You talk us through these. So what's this going on in this picture here? We've got a bunch of fish.
That's our main display tank, and all those plants are real.
All those plants. Let me just describe it to somebody who's listening to the podcast. So is this the biggest tank? This is the 20-liter one?
No, the 200-liter.
200-liter. Okay, so this
how big is this thing?
200 liters. So this is huge. Is this in one of your living rooms? Because, I mean, it's beautiful. It really is magnificent.
Yeah, so all these ones are in, like, my lounge kitchen area. And then... my office area.
All right, so let me explain to people what it looks like. He's got this beautiful black sand at the bottom of it. There are all kinds of plants. They all look lush and happy. It's green, and I mean, it looks like an underwater forest, basically. There are about, I can count, maybe 30 or 40 fish swimming around, and they all look very happy. There's some shells on the ground. There's some rocks. There's one big fish that looks quite menacing at the bottom there, a couple of pebbles. And then there's bubbles, obviously, because your aquarium has to be oxygenated, and this is how you get the oxygen into the water. So now you can explain in more detail who these fish are and what kind of things they get up to.
So at the top there is mostly gouramis.
Yeah.
Then like kind of in the middle, those are clown loaches, rasboras, cichlids, Chinese algae eaters. So this is the community tank. So this is where they can almost all live together and not eat each other.
Okay, so these are the fish that get along. These are not the ones who try to kill each other.
But mostly.
And occasionally you'll put something in there and you'll have done the research, but it'll still behave badly.
Yeah, no, you definitely get, just like people, you get fish that have very bad personalities.
All right. Tell us what's going on in this next picture. These look like goldfish.
No, those are actually platies.
Platies.
So what's interesting about these fish, I don't know if you've heard about guppies before.
Yes, guppies I've heard of. The rest of those fish you named just now, I had no idea what you're talking about.
So it's just above the orange one, that's a guppy.
Okay.
And the nice thing about these fish is they give birth to live young. So a lot of fish lay eggs.
Right.
Where these ones give birth to live young. So they're actually like quite easy to breed.
And these are not difficult to keep either. I mean, I know lots of people who have guppies. You have a tank, you put an air thing, the bubble thing into it, and you just make sure that you feed them, and they're pretty much happy. They're not high maintenance.
Well, let me put it this way. Most people don't maintain their fish tanks as well as they should, if I can say that.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole process involved. You'll be interested because
go on, I
want to
hear.
There's a lot of like chemistry to it.
Yeah.
So the nitrogen cycle and the way that the waste from the fish needs to be converted from ammonia to nitrite, and then from nitrite to nitrate, and then nitrate you take out by doing water changes.
So how often do you have How often do you have to change the water in these tanks?
So what you have is like a test strip,
yeah.
And you test the water, and if the nitrates are above a certain amount, that's when it's time to change the water.
So,
right? So I change every week, about 30% of each tank, but that's only because I'm trying to breed them, right? So you're trying to keep the water as clean as possible.
Optimal. So you do this,
and do you ever run into a problem where you've got too many in one tank, and what do you do then? Do you just flush them down the loo?
I have done that before. That's something that I'm proud of. This is going to sound bad, right? But if you have, like, say the guppies are breeding too much and you have little babies, you can feed them to the bigger fish.
No, that makes sense.
The circle of life.
That's the circle of life, exactly.
All right, so what have we got here? Because that seems like there's a lot of different societies. This is a tank. This is interesting. Let me explain to people what's happening here. So there's a huge big tank, and it's been divided by glass partitions into four separate tanks, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on in each of these. Do you want to explain what this process is and what's happening?
Okay, so this tank, it's mostly meant for bettas, which are Siamese fighter fish.
Mm-hmm.
And with those, they have to stay by themselves. If they're together, they'll kill each other. That's why they're called Siamese fighter fish.
Yeah.
Right.
They're beautiful Siamese fighters. They've got those lovely fanned out frilly tails.
Yes. So I don't know if you can see in the third one from the left, you can see that bit of a blue at the top there. That's one of them. You can't see that well. But then what's really interesting, and I don't think a lot of people know in fish keeping, is that you can keep shrimp.
Oh.
So freshwater shrimp. So if you look on the left, on the glass there, there's a shrimp. And then on the green patch at the bottom, there's a whole lot of little shrimp there.
Yeah.
And those are called red cherry shrimp.
And if you're listening, you're not missing very much because we can't see a whole lot of detail here, but it looks very impressive from the outside and taking in the whole tank. So did you make this yourself? Did you actually make this tank?
No, I bought it.
Okay.
I bought it like
this. This is my favorite
one.
It is my
next project.
Bulela?
Yeah. I was just saying, this is my favorite one because the trash people from like Krugersdorp con mixed with the yuppies in this one. I love this one.
Yeah.
I love this tank.
Yeah, you sound like Hendrik Verwoerd. All right, so is this back in the community tank now with all the different fish? Because there's a huge array of different fish here. This is, again, if you're listening, it's incredible. There must be, I can see maybe 20 different kinds of fish in this one tank, and they're all swimming around happily.
So this is also guppies, live bear, live bears, swordtails, platies. So these are all fish that give birth to live young.
Amazing.
And the reason you plant it like that is so that the babies can hide and that they don't get eaten.
Oh, right. So they have to keep vigilant because something is going to try and eat them no matter what.
Yeah, their own mother.
And you think you have problems in your family. That's amazing, Wesley. All right, so what does this hobby cost you? Because this is not, this is not some cheap thing that you're talking about here. You have to buy the tanks, you have to buy the chemicals, you have to buy the fish, you have to be able to change the water out. There must be electricity costs here because you've got to keep the things lit and the pumps working.
Well, I just want to check if my mother's listening.
Okay.
No, so it is expensive to set up tanks, and then obviously the food and what's called water conditioner, which you have to make sure to take the chlorine out of the tap water.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe R1,000 a month.
Okay. Well, that's you know, for something that you love, that's not the end of the world, R1,000 a month.
Yeah.
But what are your most expensive fish? Because you could probably buy some pretty incredible and exotic fish.
So I don't know. I wouldn't say that like I'm really into very – like maybe the most expensive is R100 per fish.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're not talking –
But about... in salt water, they're much more expensive. Like you can pay up to R1,000 for one fish.
All right. So we're talking –
So I think I'll just stick to freshwater for now.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if you think about the salmon that you have at the restaurant, that's more than R100 a fish. So – I'll
exactly,
go with this, yeah. And these ones are alive. How long do these fish live?
It depends. So, people don't know. Like a goldfish can live 30 years.
Jeez.
If it's kept properly.
But
some like guppies maybe 2 years.
Okay. All right. Do people think you're weird when they find out that you have these 12 aquariums?
I don't really give a damn.
No.
Shout out Wesley.
it's my own thing, and it's something that I'm proud of. It's like having a piece of nature in your house.
It's fantastic.
I mean, what could be better than that?
It looks really cool. Like I've always thought it's like a living painting. It's just you've got these incredible little creatures. All of them have their own personalities, I suppose. I mean, I don't really know whether fish have personalities or not. But
they do.
They do?
Yes. Depending on the fish, like better fish, like you were talking about, Leanne.
The Siamese.
They'll follow you around when you come into the room. They'll come up to the tank. If you try and feed them, they'll even try feed off your finger. So some fish you can definitely tell they're a pet.
That's amazing. And you've got these, and it also looks beautiful in your house, and you have to maintain it. So it's like a little garden, an underwater garden that you're basically, you're cultivating. Mm. Are there ever really terrible accidents and disasters in the aquariums? Ever had like a mass extinction event?
So what did happen is I had another tank in my old house, and I came into the lounge one morning and it had actually like cracked all the way down the side, and there was like this much water left at the bottom of the tank. So luckily all the fish were fine, but the whole lounge was flooded.
Oh God. I mean, a 200 liter tank, that's significant. How much water is that? Like that's a bath and some.
It's a flood. It's a flood.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So, Wesley, how do you go on? How do you ever like take a weekend off for yourself? I mean, I can barely trust people to come and, you know, I don't know, like do the yard when I'm not there. Is how would something like this? How would you ever go away for a weekend? Who could you trust with an ecosystem?
So the thing that I would say, the easiest is that fish can go without food for 2 weeks and they'll be fine. And the way that I run my tanks is that there's like a lot of algae and a lot of stuff on plants, and so they won't starve to death. Like they'll just keep on eating the algae and stuff in the aquarium. So I would just leave them.
And then they'll be okay for up to 2 weeks. That's amazing.
Yeah, because I wouldn't trust someone, because the biggest issue in a fish tank is how much food you put in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and you put in, if you tell someone to feed your fish, what you think is a pinch is very different to what someone else thinks is a pinch. And if they put in a whole lot of food, that can cause ammonia, and then that can cause a big problem. So no, I would just not feed them.
It's so complicated. I had no idea that this stuff was so complicated. What do you do when there is load shedding, says Zunaid?
Yo, I panic. Honestly, like it's, so my biggest thing in winter was the temperature.
Yeah.
So what I was doing, especially the ones with fry in them, like the baby fish.
Yes.
I would wrap them in like towels and then just pray.
That's right.
But what about the oxygen?
So that's also a thing. So you can put in like an air stone with a battery powered air pump.
Oh wow. Okay.
But it hasn't been awful long enough that I've worried about that too much. It was more the temperature.
And then
I was really stressed.
Okay.
We've got so many really interesting comments here. Someone, Michael, says here, what a collection. It reflects beauty and discipline. That's true. I mean, you can't really ever take your foot off the pedals there. You know, these creatures, they depend on you completely. Corona's Boring says, Wesley's living his best life, which I think is true here.
Yeah.
Steph says, I didn't know that. Oh, hang on. No, hang on. Sorry, that's got nothing to do with it. One tank is LinkedIn, where everybody gets along for their own good, and the other one is like Twitter, where it's anarchy.
Exactly.
Oh, that's probably about right.
Exactly.
Our fish tank, says Tracy, looks sad now by comparison with Wesley's. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, one tip I would just give everyone is live plants.
Live? Where do you even find live aquatic plants? Do you get them at like pet shops? Where do you go for your supplies?
Most, you kind of have to go to more like aquarium-centered pet shops,
mm-hmm.
Where they'll have an assortment of plants. But actually, the online space is becoming much better with ordering fish online.
Really?
Ordering plants online.
How do they how do they deliver these fish to you if you order them online?
In like a polystyrene box with like bags, and there's actually a really good site called My Tank Life if anyone is interested, and they have lots of like fish, shrimp, snails. There's even freshwater snails, which is very cool.
So you haven't thought of maybe launching a YouTube channel where people can watch your fish tanks with you live?
Well, I work full time, so
you don't have time for this.
You know, no.
Okay,
but maybe one day when I'm rich.
Well, I mean, like people would be interested. I find this fascinating, and I think for a lot of people, it's a very calming and cathartic thing to watch fish swimming around in a tank. It makes the whole world feel like, you know, everything's okay, and people need this kind of thing. Mm. You know, there are those people who have that wallpaper on their computers of just like a fish tank because it's a very calming, beautiful thing to look at, right?
Mm. No, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's amazing. We can tell, and I just love speaking to people who are passionate about their collections. It's great to talk to you and lovely to meet you, Wesley, and well done. This is a really impressive collection.
Cool, guys.
Good to see you, dude.
Cool. Awesome.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys.
Wow. Isn't that cool?
Bye.
Cheers.
Very.
What an interesting dude.
So I had a goldfish when I was very young, and just one in a little round bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to wake up every morning, and the first thing I would do would be to put my face into the bowl and have a look at the fish, kind of greet the fish. And the one morning, the fish was not in the bowl.
Uh-oh, cats.
And out of sheer panic, I started making my way to my mom and dad's bedroom. My mom was in the shower. And I said to her, Mom, the fish is not in the bowl. So she said, all right, I'm coming. We'll have a look. And on the way back, as we were both walking to my bedroom, there were these orange patches all over the carpet.
Oh, no.
Because I'd stood on it in my socks.
Oh.
So there was mushed fish all the way down the passage and in my bedroom.
But how did it get out of the bowl?
Oh, Lord.
Was it one of the cats?
They sometimes jump out. No, I didn't have cats then. Oh, no, they do. They jump out.
So I
obviously had it filled up too much.
I heard a story from my sister-in-law yesterday about my littlest nephew who decided to take his fishing net and go and fish a little, I suppose a goldfish or a koi or whatever it was, out of one of the neighbor's ponds. And he proceeded, he's all of 5 years old, he proceeded to carry this thing in his hand back to their house and decided he was going to put it in their water feature, which was dirty and filthy and wasn't by any... And the thing was still alive. And my sister-in-law then found
it. And those are expensive.
And she said to him, where did you find this fish? And he said, in the road. Just, you know, lying. So she said, no, I'm sure that it couldn't live in the road. Let's put it in some clean water and let's go and find it a place where it can live. And then she walked down the road and she saw that the fishing net just parked off next to this neighbor's water feature and a bunch of other fish in there. And she realized that that was where it had come from. But luckily, the thing was still alive. So, you know, these are the things.
What if it was one of those like 30 grand, like a friend of mine, I know who's.
My cat ate a couple of those when we were living in a complex.
We had this
irate man knocking on the door. And when I opened it, he physically pushed me into the house. He was so angry. And he was like, your fucking cat's eating my... And I said to him, I really doubted they're here all the time. And he looked at the couch and he saw the one sitting there and he pointed and he said, that's the one. That's the one.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it's... Dude, like, think how nature works.
Yeah.
You should have some kind of netting over your fish.
But
it could be a hardy dog could take one for all I know.
Yeah. And there are birds that will spot these fish from up on high and come and get them. So, Mbulelo, you know someone who has 30 grand koi?
Oh, no, it's revolting. They're like, and a couple of them. Like, it's a whole thing. And I'm not into that whole, as you know, that pet world or whatever. For her, it's just, it's unthinkable not to have the creme de la creme. And I'm just like,
wow.
Okay, you're making all the money in the world, but
just imagine like some of these really ancient strains of koi that, you know, they have in Japan that they've, you know, been breeding for thousands of years. And these things are enormous, by the way. They're like the size of a human eventually. And they creep me the hell out. I'm like, I'm not a fish person. I don't
really.
Well, I'm not frightened of them, but I just don't like the feel of a fish is just and the way they kind of just they just drift around in the water and kind of come up to the. It's not my favorite thing. Like I had goldfish as a kid. Who didn't, right? Because it was a cheap, easy pet, and you really have to be a complete ignoramus to not be able to look after that. I think it should be a starter pet for everybody because everything is more everything's more complicated than that. A bird, a dog, a cat, these are all more they're all more complicated than fish. But you know, when you take it to the level Wesley's doing it at, then it's obviously very complicated. But yeah, it's not my I've never really thought that fish were very interesting and they do creep me out a bit. I suppose I'm biased.
They are delicious though.
Yeah, they are.
Salmon is delicious. Am I killing half the ocean? Possibly.
Well, they're
my God.
Most of the salmon that you eat these days is farmed anyway. So,
and also all the people that believe in the Enneagram are telling me it's all the good oils, the essential oils. Like they know what they're talking
about. Omega-3s.
Like if I hear that again. If I hear that again from some yuppie, I'm going to slap you in the face in public and I'll take the jail time.
So
And then there's the risk of mercury poisoning.
Oh, gosh.
Why is life so hard?
So good stuff says, what did that neighbor of yours think you were going to do, Leanne? Scold the cat? Do you think it's going to stop and listen to you? That's a good point.
Go on. You're going in the right direction.
Admin said hardy dogs are fond of expensive koi's, fuckers. Yeah, I'm sure that hardy dogs have a huge responsibility in this. That's why occasionally they need to be shot. Richard says you can put cat barriers on your wall, apparently, if you have a problem.
Yeah, I've never actually heard of those, and I'm trying to think of how they would work because cats can get over anything. But the thing is, if you have the animal that's lower down on the food chain, then you need to be responsible to look after that animal. So you need to put the netting on your fish rather than me stopping my cat.
So you can cat-proof your house now. I don't know if you know that, Leanne, is that if you live in complexes, a friend of mine has it, And I once went and visited him and the cat got out and I'm just like, oh my God, I don't really care. But now I'm at your house. I'm trapped. I got to look for this thing for 2 hours. Anyway, you can cat trap your house so that the cats can't get out. And what you do is you get these people in. It's a real full on service.
Yeah.
They come to your house and they build like this fence so that I can't remember which way they build it, like invert or that way. But essentially your cat can't climb out of your little complex.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's had it full on done. And I thought, oh, bloody
That's
hell.
That's amazing.
Cats.
Yeah. So
keep your Mo Rabbit says, keep your dumb cats out of people's gardens.
Yeah, I'm with Mo Rabbit. I have to be honest with you. The cats are at the very bottom of my list. But in your situation there, Leanne, I'm like, it's the same thing as somebody who drives like a Bentley and worries about scratching it. Like, if you can't afford your fish to be eaten, don't have it. Why do you have it? With a Bentley worries about the tire costs.
I just think, you know, if you can have cheap fish, why get expensive ones? Fish tanks were our iPads back in the 1970s, says Brian. Oh yes. Grey herons are hunters in our koi pond. They really like the blue ones. Huh. See? Our hardy does remove all the snails from our garden. I love them, says Michael. And Lenise says it's like a cat's jail, what Mbulela was describing just now. Yeah, sounds like it. I've got an enclosed patio, says Robin. It's called a catio.
Yes, catios are very popular, especially in Europe where they've got small properties.
Well, when Staring Pikachu says, get 2 German shepherds, no cat will dare step into your yard. That's true.
Jack Russells. Oh, God, they hate cats.
Cats would probably disagree as to who's lower down on the food chain, lol. And cats are fucking awful, man, says Carl. It's amazing. Some people just don't like them and some people hate them. So my sister was telling me there's a tree near them in the house they've just moved into. And this tree is, they call it the cat tree. And there's like 10 feral cats who live in this tree. And there's a man who comes to feed them every day. And this tree is just, and these cats live in the tree, and that's what they do. It's a tree full of cats. So I'm going to go and check out the cat tree today and see if it's true.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Right?
What did you say? You really are having a go at yuppies this morning. What is that, Mbulelo?
Like yuppie leopards, you know, they just live up in the tree. And somebody catches the feed for you. You come down from the tree every now and then, and you enjoy your low fat almond milk treat, and
we've
and
come
you head back
we've,
up.
We've come full circle. So those cats in the cat tree have exactly the kind of life you were shitting on your nephew for.
100%. 100%.
Full circle.
They'll tell you they're under pressure. But those cats will tell you we're under pressure. Climbing's hard.
Oh, it's so difficult. Oh. So hard. And this man,
almond milk is worth
this man. Yeah, this man didn't bring me the decaf almond milk special weight loss version of the cat food. So I'm not going to eat that today. Life is so hard. I'm going to have to go and see the Dr. Hanan of cats because I'm just not coping.
I didn't get my hyperallergenic pea sourced cat food.
Exactly. All right, everybody, have a happy Monday and we will see you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com. Plenty of good stuff happening this week. Also, we got to check in with Sean Sanders this week. I see Bitcoin's at $47,595, which if you've been holding on, hodling, then that's good news for you. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. Be good. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.